Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across western New York. It's the eve of OTA's organized team activity, and we'll talk with veteran running back Fred Jackson about OTA's and what it meant to his career. Mark Kelso, my broadcast partner, the former Bills safety, joins us tonight to talk about his new book, and we'll talk about contracts with Mike Jannetty, the founder of SpotTrack.
This place is pandemonium!
Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go. Another week begins. One day late. Good evening. Welcome to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO for Tuesday night, March 27th. Thanks for tuning in. You heard the lineup. We're going to talk a lot tonight about OTAs. And what's an OTA? Organized Team Activity. It begins tomorrow here at One Bills Drive. It's going to be the theme of our show for at least the early portion of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, thanks to Sal Capaccio for filling in last Friday, enabled us to get an extra long Memorial Day weekend. Sal will be back here, as a matter of fact, this coming Friday. So I'm with you the next three nights here, and we've got some good shows planned. A lot of them coinciding with the beginning of organized team activity. The first of 10 days of OTAs begins tomorrow. OTAs. People think, what the? I remember working in television news when the news people would say, OTAs, what is that? What is organized team activity? And I would tell them, and they would say, well, isn't organized team activity supposed to go on every day out there? That was a joke for the news people. But organized team activity is just the name for the next phase of the off-season workout program. You know, just, and so you have it in your mind, the voluntary off-season conditioning program began on Tuesday, April 22nd. And the Bills veterans have been here since then, for the most part, voluntarily. The rookie minicamp was a couple of weekends ago, May 17th through May 19th. Ended last weekend? So, yeah, 2 weekends ago. Organized team activity starts tomorrow. OTAs, organized team activity. Strictly prescribed exactly what can go on at organized team activity. Goes on all over the NFL. There are 3 weeks of organized team activity, which takes you into the mandatory minicamp, which starts 3 weeks today. That's a 3-day minicamp, Tuesday, June 17th through Thursday, June 19th. All of this outlined by the new collective bargaining agreement. In fact, tomorrow night on the show, we're going to have Troy Vincent on the show with us tomorrow night. Troy is the NFL Executive Vice President for Football Operations, former Bills defensive back. Troy was adamant a couple of years ago when he was still playing here with the Bills about how there was too much time being spent on off-season workouts, that the players' time was being cut into. Well, they got that change, the players did, in the last CBA, and now that's what we're working with now, the new CBA, now in its, third season, second off-season, and it's a different setup, organized team activity. 25 teams around the league began or resumed organized team activity as of today. 6 teams, including the Bills, will begin or resume their OTAs tomorrow. The Bills, the Broncos, the Giants, the Packers, Ravens, and Vikings start tomorrow. The Rams, the only team who are not holding OTAs this week, they start their organized team activities next Tuesday. OTAs, organized team activity. It's laid out exactly what these teams can do. Practices in which no live contact can occur. More on that in a minute. There is 11-on-11 practice work allowed, but one-on-one drills are not allowed. Players cannot work for longer than 6 hours. Practices are limited to 2 hours, with coaches able to provide instruction. The OTAs are voluntary. So the Bills will have 10 OTAs over the next 3 weeks, this week, next week, the following week. They can have a maximum of 3 organized team activity sessions each week over the first 2 weeks, a 4th workday allowed over the first 2 weeks. I don't believe the Bills have anything scheduled for that. The last couple of weeks of off-season, Bills and other teams were allowed four-hour work days. Now they get six-hour work days, and the days start pretty early during OTAs. The Bills, I believe, are here around 8 in the morning for meetings, a team meeting. Then they go to individual position group meetings. They get on the field at 10:30 in the morning tomorrow, get off the field at 12:30. There's weightlifting different groups before and after, and then more meetings after that. So it's a fairly long day, not a, you know, an onerous day, but a fairly long day, and it's longer than it has been during the off-season workouts. No pads allowed during the workouts, except for protective knee and elbow pads. Helmets are permitted. No live contact drills between offensive linemen and defensive linemen or wide receivers and defensive backs. They can do 7-on-7, which they will. They can do 9-on-7, which they might. They can do 11-on-11, which they probably will. But no live contact. So those are the rules for organized team activity. It starts tomorrow. Coming up on the show tonight, we're going to talk with Fred Jackson about OTAs and how it's changed over the course of his career. I would maintain that a guy like Fred Jackson, way back in 2006, 8 years ago, took advantage of organized team activity to make his mark, to catch the eye of coaches, to show that he might have something to offer. If you remember Fred Jackson's career path, he came here in the spring of 2006, right off a stint playing in NFL Europe. He had played in indoor, I think it was NFL Europa that time. He had played in indoor football leagues, arena leagues before that. Coke College connection, so Marv Levy had knowledge of him. But he came here in 06 and right away had a pretty good organized team activity session, pretty good off-season workouts. They kept him around on the practice squad in 2006. In 07, he made the roster, started a game or two in 07, and, of course, the rest is history. Now he's, if not one of the favorite players on the roster, one of the most productive players over the last few years. Fred Jackson, I maintain, used organized team activity to carve out a niche on this Buffalo Bills roster, and it didn't happen all at once. He used the OTAs in 2006 to let them know that there's something there, maybe you should keep him around, so they kept him around in the practice squad. I would tell you this, too. Kiko Alonso, last year, I think earned a starting spot from what he showed in organized team activity. Mike, what do you think, producing tonight?
I think you're absolutely correct.
Don't you think? Do you remember Kiko at OTAs last year? Chris Brown and I, our jaws dropped when Kiko was assigned to cover C.J. Spiller on a little wheel route out of the backfield, and he was step for step with him into the end zone. As quick as C.J. Spiller coming out of the backfield, that got my attention. I think it got coaches' attention, too.
I think we were all a little shocked at how it, you know, the speed that Kiko had.
That happened in OTAs, organized team activity. So I would say to you that there are opportunities here over the next 3 weeks for A, players to win spots on the roster, or B, players to earn starting spots in organized team activity. So think about this Buffalo roster. Think about who's on the roster and who might have a chance to do that over the next 3 weeks. Who do you think can either earn a spot on the roster, earn a second look, or maybe earn a starting spot by a good showing over the next 3 weeks in OTAs? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter as well. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Which players on the Buffalo Bills roster do you think have a chance to impress over the next 3 weeks at OTAs? Have a chance to either earn a starting spot, a spot on the roster, or even just a second look, maybe a start on the practice squad for a year? 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. A couple of tweets already. The Bunk tweets in, you don't win roster spots or starting positions in OTAs. I disagree. I think you can. I think Kiko did it last year. I think Kiko showed enough in the OTAs for people to think, hey, we can plug this guy in and play with him right away. I mean, that's the way training camp started. How do you think they got the idea to let Kiko Alonso line up at the inside linebacker spot first day of training camp last year? OTAs. What do you think happened for Fred Jackson to get that second look when they went to training camp in 06 and then to get in the practice squad in 2006? I'm telling you what it was. It was OTAs. I think you can win roster spots and starting positions in OTAs. Is it critical? No. I mean, are guys going to make the roster regardless of what they do over the next 3 weeks? Absolutely. And you can probably name them too. But name me some players who need a good showing in the next 3 weeks to demonstrate that they belong on this roster. You start, I would think, with the rookies, and there's obviously rookies who, you know, all the undrafteds, most of the draft picks, I think, have to show well. I mean, Sammy Watkins is going to play. You know that. He's going to start. But there are other guys, I think, that crowded field at wide receiver. You know, all those wide receivers the Bills have right now. Guys like Chris Hogan, guys who maybe have even been around here. Ramsey Barden, a free agent signee in the, you know, a couple of months ago. need to have a good showing. There's, what, 12 or 13 receivers on the roster right now. They need to show something so that the coaching, now nobody's, you know, very rarely will somebody get released between OTAs and training camp, but I do think it goes to a little bit informing the mindset of the coaching staff on where they might belong, where they would fit in. Andrew Farrell tweets in, seems fairly obvious, Pierce and Urbick need to have great camps. I mean, I think Eric Pierce is going to be challenged, obviously. I think Urbick has maybe a little bit more of a lockdown on the right guard spot. I think, you know, Chris Williams, the free agent who's kind of penciled in at left guard, it would be nice to see him show well. Billy Regan tweets in, safety will be competitive. Aaron Williams locks the spot. Denoris and Duke battle it out for another spot. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's a good point. Maybe Denoris Searcy or Duke Williams locks down the other starting safety spot with the performance over the next 3 weeks. Yeah, that's a very good point. Brian Worthy tweets in, Duke Williams and Chris Williams need to show and prove they are ready. I'll go along with that, especially in Duke Williams. I think Chris Williams, it would be nice to see that he fits in here at the left guard spot, that he can do what they want to ask him to do. Brian Griffo tweets in, TJ Graham will be in for a fight. Good point. Good point. You know, OTAs could do that. Guy like T.J. Graham who's being challenged by rookies. I mean, look at it. They've drafted three rookie wide receivers in the last two drafts. They've added free agents like Mike Williams and Ramsey Barden. There's so much competition to wide receiver. Once you get past Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin and maybe Mike Williams, once you get past those four, I think all bets are off. Any one of them. Any one of them would be in a fight for a job. And I do think it starts at OTAs. Now, they're not going to be hitting. They're not going to be playing real football. There is no live contact. We've gone over the rules of the road and what goes on here at OTAs. But there is a chance to impress. I'll tell you one guy who had a good, I thought, OTA last year was T.J. Graham. We just mentioned his name. T.J. Graham, you know, without pads on, without hitting, I thought looked very good last spring. And obviously, you know, the coaching staff felt pretty good about it, taking him into training camp, getting in the playing time that they got him last year. But it's a competitive spot now with about a dozen wide receivers on the roster. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Which Bills players currently on the roster need to show well either to win a starting job or to lock down a roster spot in the OTAs, or maybe just to get a second look, maybe just to hang around for another year like Fred Jackson did earlier in his career. The OTAs start tomorrow. Is the pressure on? No, I won't tell you that, but it's going to be interesting to see how these guys look doing football moves without pads on, running 11-on-11 and 9-on-7 and 7-on-7 drills. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. I'll start with a call from Jim in Buffalo. Hello, Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, I think Marquise Goodwin is going to take this opportunity to shine because, like, up to now, you know, he's been kind of, like, thought of as, like, an afterthought, and he's going to, like, really show that, like, you know, hey, I'm not just an afterthought. I'm like, you know, a deep threat and everything. So.
Yeah, it's a good point. This is a time of year without the hitting, without the jamming. You know, the really aggressive jam at the line of scrimmage. It's the time of year when flyers like Marquise Goodwin or like T.J. Graham with his quickness a year ago, they can shine, you know. It's basically basketball and football jerseys for the most part when you get into 7-on-7 stuff. And guys like that on the smaller side, I think, have an opportunity to look good in these OTAs. We're talking to the fans tonight. We're taking phone calls about the organized team activities. They start tomorrow for the Bills, the first of 10 OTA practice days for the Bills. We're going to talk with Fred Jackson about it at the bottom of the hour, but we want to get your thoughts as well. Who needs to show well over the next 3 weeks in order to win a roster spot or lock down a starting job or even stick around a little bit longer? Here is Alan in Lancaster. Hi, Alan. Welcome. You're on the air. Are you there, Alan? Alan, we can't reach him. Give us a call again. Try again, Alan. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Bills Fanatics BF tweets in, Jeff Toole needs to have a great showing to stay on the roster. Maybe. I mean, you know, he's going to get to camp, I would think, for sure. I do think Thad Lewis is pretty much the acknowledged number two. I do think they like what they've seen from Dennis Dixon in the time that he's been around here late last season and into this season. So who's going to be number three? Yeah. Vince Guarino tweets in, Tony Moiaki. Yeah, good point. You'd like to see Tony Moiaki be healthy and mobile and ready to contribute. Really? Charlie Oswald tweets in, would like to see one of the tight ends step up. Yeah, that plays into Moayaki as well. Graham, I think is a guy who you'd like to see at least a little bit better. You can see, one good thing about OTAs, you can see when guys are just out there in the football uniforms without the pads, you can see the guys who have, you know, changed their body makeup over the course of the offseason. Guys who either being directed to do so or otherwise have, you know, bulked up or slimmed down or added, body mass in their upper body, that sort of thing. You can see that when you get to OTAs. Kevin Marshall tweets in, T.J. Graham is seriously on the bubble. Many people believe that. Scott tweets in, Spikes needs to set the tone on defense. Yeah, I don't know, and without the hitting component that you won't have in the OTAs, I don't know how you set the tone. I mean, you can obviously be a leader. You can go through the drills in an aggressive fashion. We're going to talk about that, too, based on what happened at the Cowboys camp today. Here is Alan in Lancaster trying again. Alan, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Sorry about what before
That's
missing
okay.
the call.
Yeah.
I have a question in regard to we just drafted a bunch of big guys. You know, we have Chantrell, we have Richardson, we have Cyrus Kiwanjo, we've got Chris Williams. I mean, the competition is going to be intense. Supposing hypothetically that Chantrell and Kiwanjo both are terrific, and you got Cordy Glenn who's terrific, and you got three potential starting tackles. Is it conceivable that one of them could play guard? And if that's so, if we put across this gigantic line, what would happen on week four when we play Houston? Our O line against their D line with Watt, Clowney, Louis Nix. What do you think that would be like?
It'd be brutal to watch. It'd be great to watch that kind of a matchup. But you're a little bit ahead of yourself, Alan, in terms of, you know, the Bills versus Houston on September 28th. But as far as the competition on the offensive line, there's no question with those three draft picks, the Bills have bulked up and beefed up on the offensive line. And it's a direct challenge to the guys who've been on that offensive line, who were on that offensive line last year. There's no question about that. And they know it, too, by the way. They know it. Those guys who've been there know that there are bigger guys coming in. The guys, you know, Ligurski, Unga, J.J. Unga, who they liked a lot late last year. You know, he's in for the fight of his life now in his second year. They know that the challenge is coming, you know. Doug Ligurski, I mentioned Craig Urbick, Mark Asper, a former draft pick who came back last year. They know that there's a challenge that's going to be presented to them, and that they're going to have to answer that challenge. And, yeah, I mean, do all three of them, you know, start all three of those rookies? I think that's unlikely. I think the most likely rookie to start would be Kiwanjo at the right tackle position. I think Cyril Richardson, as a fifth-rounder, still has some development to do, and Chantrell Henderson, the seventh-rounder, obviously is going to need some development, and they're all going to have to adapt to the NFL, all three of them. They're all going to have to sort of plug into the NFL thing, but yeah, there's a chance that all three make the roster, and that means three fewer jobs for the veterans who return. Talking about OTAs, the Bills and about five other teams start organized team activity tomorrow. About 25 other teams began today. Give us your thoughts on who needs to show well to either win a roster spot or perhaps to lock down a starting spot. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter when you reach us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Somebody tweeted in about Brandon Spike setting the tone on defense. As I said, hard to do when there's no hitting. And even without hitting, your worst nightmare can happen sometimes in OTAs. That's the Dallas Cowboys today. The Cowboys today are worried that their top linebacker, Sean Lee, tore his left ACL during their first organized team activity workout. He is undergoing an MRI. The Cowboys are trying to find out whether it is, in fact, a torn ACL. He tore his right ACL in 2008 at Penn State and then partially tore his left ACL in the 2009 season. If he's got a torn knee ligament, a torn ACL in his left knee today, that means his season is over. On the play, he was injured. And remember, these are non-contact workouts at the Cowboys training camp. Sean Lee appeared to be slipping, according to reports, while being blocked by rookie right guard Zach Martin, the Notre Dame guy, on a screen pass. Lee remained on the ground and needed to be helped to the locker room by members of the training staff. Zach Martin says he doesn't know what happened, really. Two guys playing hard, running to the ball. He's obviously a great player, leader of the defense. Sean Lee missed 5 games last season with hamstring and neck injuries. Just got a 6-year contract extension last summer. Really a vital component to the Dallas Cowboys defense. Sean Lee, their linebacker, and now they're worried that he may be lost for the season due to an injury today. A torn ACL, perhaps. They're looking at it now. That is the nightmare of OTAs. That's what no one wants to read about. That's why they limit them to 10 OTA sessions, and that's why they are so careful on exactly what you can do. Haven't seen any video of the Sean Lee injury. You can imagine it, two guys locked up, Lee trying to get to the outside, you would think, on a screen pass, being slipped when he's being blocked by Zach Martin. There are some concerns already out there on the internet that, you know, the league office may have a look at that video to see if there was, in fact, excessive contact between Martin and Sean Lee. The rules say you're not supposed to have contact. I mean, they're going to snap the ball and they're going to engage. How much is excessive, I think, is up for debate, but that could be a problem for the Cowboys moving forward. But the big problem is the potential loss of one of their top defensive players, Sean Lee, with a knee injury. At the Houston Texans training camp, their quarterback, or OTA rather, their quarterback battle is wide open. Texans coach Bill O'Brien told reporters after their first OTA that it is wide open. O'Brien praised Ryan Fitzpatrick's ability to pick up the new playbook. Shouldn't come as any surprise. He said that returners Case Keenum and T.J. Yates have a chance to win the top job, as does undrafted rookie free agent Tom Savage. A poll of Houston Chronicle readers favors Case Keenum. Last year, started the end of last year over Fitzpatrick, with Savage and Yates bringing up the rear. Andre Johnson did not show at the Texans OTA, and it is voluntary. The 7-time Pro Bowler said 2 weeks ago he did not plan on attending or the mandatory minicamp in June. O'Brien said, love to have him here, but that's up to him. Johnson has not been around at all for the Texans offseason program. They're not quite sure what he wants changed. He spoke 2 weeks ago at a charity event. He said, wondered if Houston was the right place for him. And finally, at the Tennessee Titans OTAs, Jake Locker ran the Titans' first-team offense, got the first-team reps at their first OTA practice. Locker said he felt good. It's the first time since he suffered a season-ending foot injury last November that he was able to run with the first-teamers. Jake Locker, the quarterback now at Tennessee. OTAs for the Bills start tomorrow, and the players will be here bright and early in the morning to go to meetings. They'll be on the field from 10:30 until 12:30, and then more meetings after that. The first of 10 days of organized team activity sessions for the Bills. We're all over it tomorrow. We'll talk to some of the principals, including head coach Doug Marrone, tomorrow after the OTA workout. We'll have probably a player interview for you after the OTA workout tomorrow. And we're going to talk more about it tonight as well, on the eve of organized team activity. Veteran Fred Jackson getting set for another year with the Buffalo Bills, who basically, I guess, you know, the way I look at it is he goes into his 8th year in the league, basically won his job by virtue of his performance during organized team activity back in 2006. We're going to talk with Fred about that challenge. We're going to talk with him about the challenge presented on the roster this year and some of the new wrinkles in the Buffalo Bills offense when he joins us in studio. Fred Jackson coming up next. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are live tonight at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Organized team activity, OTAs. It's the next phase of the Bills offseason, and it starts tomorrow morning here at One Bills Drive. Joining us on the line, one of the most veteran Buffalo Bills, a guy who knows his way around OTAs, running back Fred Jackson. Fred, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Yep, not a problem. I appreciate you having me.
Hey, here's why I called you. I was thinking about OTAs, and a lot of people figure, what is this? You know, just another name for an off-season workout program. But you could probably speak to this. For young guys trying to make the squad, OTAs, organized team activity, they mean a lot, don't they? I mean, you had kind of that experience yourself back in 2006, didn't you?
They do. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that especially for young guys, it's a chance to, you know, pick up the offense or defense, special teams, whatever it is it may be, you know, hit the ground running with it, you know, and it gives the coaches an opportunity to see that you know what it is that you have to do and where you're supposed to be. And it's about getting that chance to show them that they can rely on you and that you have been in the playbook and you know what you're doing.
Well, I was thinking about your situation, and for those who don't know, I mean, you're obviously a fixture on the Buffalo Bills roster now, but you played in NFL Europe in 2006 and came here right off your NFL Europe season and stepped right into the OTAs that spring in 06, right? That had to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things that you come right in after a season and you have to come in and learn a brand-new offense, and it was just one of those things that I knew that I had to take advantage of every opportunity that I was going to get. That means coming in, stepping right into OTAs and showing the coaches that I was able to make plays when my name was called and that I knew what the offense was about and where I needed to be and was going to be able to pick up blitzes and things like that. OTAs is just that opportunity that I had.
Fred, how does it change? You guys, the veterans have been back for just about a month now, going back to April 22nd. How does the routine change going from the voluntary offseason conditioning you've been through to the OTAs coming up this week?
Well, OTAs are more typically like, you know, a regular season where we'll come in, we'll watch some film, then we'll go out on the practice film, go through whatever, you know, plays and things like that that they have drawn up for us that they want us to get through. And then we'll come back in, you know, we'll eat, and then we'll go in and watch the film. So we have an opportunity to go out and play and then or practice, and then we get the opportunity to come in and watch and make corrections and see what it is that we need to improve on.
It does sound like the regular season routine, and it's obviously a step up from what you've been doing. Tell our listeners, Fred, what the routine has been like the last month or so during the off-season conditioning program. That's mostly about weightlifting and running, right, over the last month or so?
It is. Yeah, over the last month or so, all we've been doing is really, you know, getting into game shape or whatever it may be, you know, in the weight room, trying to get our weight down, our weight up, get our strength back to where we want it to be during the season. That's what a lot of guys have been focusing on, you know, the most part. And that's what we're trying to do, you know, what we were trying to do. And now that we're going into the OTAs, this is about learning this offense, being in the positions that we need to be in defense. You know, finding out who our best guys are on special teams and who we're going to make those core guys. And that's what we have to, you know, find out in this OTA period.
You know, Fred, I don't know if your weight has changed from last year, but when I stopped you the other day to ask you about coming on the show, you were coming right out of the weight room. It seemed to me that as big as you were last year, you look a little bit bigger this year. Is that accurate?
I put on a little bit of weight this year. You know, I'm always a little bit bigger than – you know, what I am during the season at this time because we do so much lifting.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's hard to maintain the weight that you have on now. But, you know, I'll be, you know, probably 1 or 2 pounds bigger going into the season than I was last year. And, again, that's just trying to keep up and, you know, take some of that punishment off of, you know, our other running backs. And, you know, being that short yardage and goal line back, you want to be as, you know, big and as physical as possible.
Yeah, this coaching staff, this Bills staff, wants you to play the role of a big back, maybe more so than any time in your career, I think, huh?
Yeah, you know, and that's a role that I'm just kind of embracing. You know, I've always prided myself on being physical and, you know, breaking tackles and things like that, and I think the best way to be able to continue to do that is to put weight on in the right ways, and that's just what I'm focusing on doing now.
Hey, Fred, it strikes me that, you know, now as you go into your eighth year, you've been around, this is the second CBA that you've worked under. Have things changed much in the length, you know, how long the OTAs can go and what you're able to do that in this new CBA? It looks a little bit different than it did maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's drastically different because, you know, now these OTAs aren't, you know, near as long as they used to be. I remember, you know, when I first started playing, OTAs were, you know, 2-3 months, you know, and I think now we have, you know, 10-12 days of OTA, so, you know, maybe a little bit longer than that, but, you know, it's a lot different now, but we still get a good amount of work in, and, you know, all we can do is, you know, take advantage of the days that we do have OTAs and get the young guys up to speed and, you know, see what they're capable of doing when they're out there on the field.
These reduced OTAs, something that was collectively bargained by the players. Are you on board with that? Do you prefer this more to have maybe, as you said, 10 or 12 days of OTAs compared to what you were doing before?
Well, I do. You know, I think it kind of keeps you fresh going into the season. You know, you don't want to be able to beat yourself up all through all season, you know, after you come through from being beat up in the regular season. So it's one of those things that I think guys kind of, you know, did a lot of research on what they thought was the best for, you know, helping guys to be able to keep their careers going, you know, as long as possible. And, you know, this is just one of the things that we have to do.
If you can put yourself in the shoes of some of the rookies and young guys trying to make the team with only 10 OTA sessions, does that make it harder for them to impress the coaching staff, would you think?
I think it's definitely a little bit harder with, you know, not as much time or as many, you know, opportunities to be out on the football field. I think that definitely hurts you. But if you can play, you know, we have, you know, tremendous scouts, you know, tremendous coaching staff, you know, that can see that. So I think you'll be able to recognize what guys are able to do in the shortened amount of time that we do have.
We're on the line with Fred Jackson, Bills running back, getting set for his eighth year, getting set for the organized team activity that starts tomorrow. Well, Fred, this Bills team traded for a running back during the draft, and they signed a running back in free agency, so the competition level has got to be ratcheted up a little bit at your position group this year, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, and it always is. You know, you don't really hear about, you know, all the things that are, you know, done like we have, you know, this season. But there's always competition in that room. You know, I think the running back position is probably one of the most talented positions on the football field. And anytime you have a group of eight guys in there competing, you know, whatever it may be, six, seven guys, you're going to compete. You know, and that's something we have to do. You know, and well, I'm accustomed to it. I know CJ's accustomed to it. You know, Bryson's coming from a backfield where they had a lot of talent over there, so. You know, we got Anthony Dixon coming in. He'll come in and he'll push us too. So we're excited about it. You know, and it's going to bring out the best in all of us.
You know, last year at this time, Fred, one of the topics of discussion among Bills fans was how are they going to work in both CJ and Fred Jackson? But you never know. Things work out, I guess. You know, CJ had the high ankle sprain. You fought through a number of injuries. You just don't know if there's enough depth at one position until you get going in the season, right?
Exactly. You know, that's what they're doing. They're just preparing for, you know, whatever may come. And it's just our job to go out there and make everything work, you know, and we'll get that done. You know, we'll all be ready. Whoever number is called is going to be up for that play or plays, whatever it may be. And we just got to go out there and do what we can whenever we get that opportunity to touch the ball.
How does E.J. Manuel look to you, Fred, in the practice time that you've had, the limited practice time you've had so far?
A lot better. You know, you can tell this is his second year in offense. You know, you can tell he's adjusted to it, knowing where guys are supposed to be. And he's constantly in that classroom, and that's the number one thing you can ask for a young quarterback is to be in the classroom and figure out, you know, things that he needs to work on or whatever it may be, you know, knowing what his teammates are capable of doing and, you know, putting him in the best position to make plays for him. So, and he's definitely taking his game to the next level, and I'm excited to see what he does for us this year.
Well, as we said, the offseason moves into another phase with the OTAs starting tomorrow. One thing, Fred, I enjoy your Twitter feed. Among all the Bills players, you seem to have more fun in the offseason than most. I mean, there's always pictures of you and your kids and Disney World and, I mean, water slides. You really do get around. You have I want to spend an offseason with you and your kids one of these years. Can I?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you want to, come hang out with us.
You do. You have a great time in the offseason with your kids, don't you?
I do. You know, it was one of those things I said that, you know, I'm going to make sure they definitely enjoy this ride as much as I do. You know, being able to take advantage of, you know, the blessed situation I am, I want to, you know, treat them to as much as possible that they can experience. So we try and do that. Anytime we get an opportunity to go somewhere, we're going to take that flight.
Looks like fun. Fred, again, thank you for doing this with us tonight. We appreciate it. We'll see you around the building. Thanks.
Not a problem. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, Fred Jackson, Bills running back, getting set for the start of OTAs tomorrow here at One Bills Drive, getting set for his eighth year in the National Football League. Bills veteran running back Fred Jackson. We've got more to come. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This
is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Again, thanks to Fred Jackson for joining us tonight. I think he tells the story pretty well about how the organized team activity in his first year here in 2006 really went a long way towards allowing him to stick around, make the roster, be the player that he's been in the NFL. You may think differently. Give us a call. We're talking about OTAs. The Bills' first of 10 days of organized team activity begins tomorrow, 10:30 on the field. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A call from Jonah in Cranberry Lake. Hello, Jonah. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I was wondering who you think has a better chance at making the roster this season, whether it be Lee Smith or Chris Gregg to be the third tight end.
Oh, good question. I called him Chris Graham in the first round. I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. They're two pretty dramatically different skill sets there, Jonah. It almost depends on what they want. And let me ask you, you're thinking Scott Chandler and Moyaki, one and two, and then looking for a third? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, because I think of Lee Smith more as just a blocking tight end because he didn't really contribute much in the passing game last year, but Chris Gregg could be the opposite, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not quite sure. We didn't see enough, I don't feel, of Chris Gregg to get a real handle on what he can bring to the table. Again, he's one of those guys I'm interested to see how much bigger he is coming back to OTAs tomorrow and seeing how much more comfortable he might be in this offense in his second year in the offense. They spent a draft pick on him, a seventh rounder a year ago, so Chris Gregg obviously has something that they like, but that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. And there's also always, I think, with those tight ends, always the opportunity to make it sort of a hybrid position. And teams will do that a lot, have a fullback slash tight end type. And I could see Moyaki maybe playing that role for the Bills. I can see there might be a couple of other candidates for that type of role for the Bills. But that'll be an interesting battle to watch, who's going to be the backups at tight end. Talking about OTAs, want to remind you that on our website, buffalobills.com, you'll get a chance to follow all of these battles for whatever it's worth during the organized team activity and just get impressions from myself and Chris Brown and Alex Vitale about what we see going on out there, what the coaches and players are saying about what's going on out there. BuffaloBills.com is the place to go for that. And if you missed it, here's a plug for BuffaloBills.com over the weekend. An outstanding story written by Anna Stolzenberg about Pat Tillman and Rob Moore, a friendship worth fighting for. It published yesterday on the website on Memorial Day. And Bills receivers coach Rob Moore was a teammate of the late Pat Tillman, the former Arizona Cardinals special teamer. And Rob Moore talks about his interaction with Pat Tillman when they played together on the Cardinals. And they were close, believe it or not. They were very close. Very good story. Kind of a nice Memorial Day story, a Memorial Day remembrance of Pat Tillman and his place in NFL history. It's up on our website now. Look for it. Pat Tillman and Rob Moore, a friendship worth fighting for. Speaking of the website, if you haven't done so already, make sure you try to download the Buffalo Bills Touch app for your iPad, Windows, or Android tablet. In that app, there's a stadium renovation guide with an interactive video tour of the behind-the-scenes video of what's going on as they rebuild Ralph Wilson Stadium, photo galleries updated regularly, and much more, a complete review of the Buffalo Bills 2014 draft as well. You can download the Buffalo Bills Touch for free. You can find it at the Apple iTunes Store, at the Windows App Store, and at the Google Play Store. Tap into the Buffalo Bills Touch app. It's an essential tool that brings you closer to the Bills than ever before. 1 hour in the books. Again, thanks to Fred Jackson for joining us in the first hour. Second hour coming up, we're going to talk about contracts and the NFL's best value players of the 2013 season and maybe look forward a little bit with Mike Giannitti, a local guy who runs the website SpotTrack, keeping track of contracts all over professional sports. And after the break, Mark Kelso, my broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network, will talk about his new endeavor, a book, a football book. He's coming up next. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby.
Halftime.
time is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, coming up at 8:30 tonight. Mike Jannetty, who is the founder of SpotTrack, a website that tracks salaries in the NFL and all professional leagues. He's got a list of the NFL's best value rankings of 2013. We're going to talk some serious football now with a longtime friend, a guy who's been in this studio several times over the last couple of years, and he's got a new endeavor out, a new book out. We're joining us in studio, former Bills safety Mark Kelso, my broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network. How are you? Great to see you.
It's been a long time.
When I see you in here, I think Friday's football
time. I'll tell you. Well, it's a little bit early, I'll tell you, but
it won't be long now.
You start to get excited.
It won't be long now.
You start to get excited. And seeing these young players come into camp and seeing what the Bills did in the draft, I think is it gets people excited and it creates some anticipation for training camp to begin. And I know there's a lot of things going on this year in training camp with the trip to Pittsburgh for several days and the added game and Andre Reed's induction into the Hall of Fame. And Shane Conlon, by the way, did you report that the other day?
College Football Hall of Fame. And Leonard Smith.
McNeese State product, but Leonard Smith. I knew that Shane was going in. I didn't realize that Leonard was in the same class.
Yeah. We'll talk about your book in a moment. I also want to get your thoughts on what you saw at the rookie minicamp a couple of weekends ago. But I want to start with a subject we talked with Fred Jackson about last hour, and that's OTAs, off-season workouts. It's different now than it was 20 years ago when you played, and you're shaking your head. You didn't like it or what? Was it too much back then?
Well, I tell you, I mean, you like your off-season to be dictated by your own schedule, and obviously you're going to come in here and you're working. I mean, I heard Tom Brady make a comment the other day that, you know, he about what he does in the off-season, and he said, I'm doing everything to be a better quarterback. I'm not trying to win battles in the weight room or off-season workouts, but I'm doing everything to condition my body to prepare myself to play come training camp and come the start of the regular season in September. And that's exactly the way we were. And we had the best strength and conditioning coach in the business in Rusty Jones, and he had his regiments. And we had time slots during the day that we could come in, that he would work out groups of players. And there were certain times throughout the day, and, you know, there were certain guys that liked to lift at certain times of the day. You kind of get your body conditioned to those time periods and, you know, when your metabolic cycles are at their peak. And some guys were here early in the morning, and some guys were here later in the afternoon.
But
he would have those scheduled times.
Practice time?
Stepped on the field. And
until
quite frankly,
training camp?
Minicamp. Minicamp was probably a little bit more robust, although we didn't do a whole lot in minicamp. It was pretty watered down. It was the rookie's first opportunity to be part of the squad.
And minicamp was 3 days or so like it is now, or a little
bit? Yeah, I think it was 3 days. I want to say Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then a lot of times, now we might practice twice in one of those days. And then after a while, a couple of times, we went to Rochester and practiced one time there, I recall. Maybe at Gates-Chiley High School one time. And just to take the product on the road a little bit. Sunday afternoon was kind of a light day because the fans were invited to attend that practice as well. And it was kind of watered down, but it was the first taste that the young players, the young drafted or rookie free agents got the opportunity to be together with the club. And there weren't a lot of guys here in the offseason. I mean, we did have a lot of guys that stayed in the offseason because they lived in Buffalo in the offseason. We had a lot of offseason activities that we did as a team. We had that basketball team that we played and developed a lot of camaraderie, but the whole squad was not together until minicamp was the first time we saw those guys, and that's, you know, really for us, for some of those guys, I think that's when preparation time really kicked in. But you know, when you're here and you live in town, and there were no restrictions with coming in, so quite frankly, about 2 weeks, you know, after the season was over, we're in here working out, and Rusty was here as our leader.
Ten or 12 years ago, things changed where the team set up organized team activity and got them on the field and basically run practices. And now they're limited to 10 such practice days a year. But it changed, and then it changed back again in the new CBA.
Well, I think what they realized, too, I mean, and there is a lot of mental fatigue that goes along with an NFL season. I mean, you particularly young guys, and I think – we saw that a little bit last year with some of our young guys, EJ Manuel and Kiko Alonso, and those guys. I mean, when you get to game 14 and 15, you're in uncharted waters as a college player, and as difficult as the game is physically, it's equally as difficult mentally. And if you're not prepared for that for the entire season, if you don't take some time to get away from the game, and I think all coaches talk about this at some point or another, but if you don't take time to get away from the game, you're going to get overwhelmed come the end of October, beginning of November, and you're going to be mentally exhausted, and you're not going to be able to play your best football. So you have to be in a situation where you're prepared to play when the season begins, but it's not like you're in mid-season form at those first couple weeks. But by the same token, the offseason, it really helps the young players, and I think there's a real value to the young players being able to study film, being able to work with the coaching staff, being able to be on the field and see what the competition level is and kind of get themselves up to speed with that competition level in the offseason, which we never really had an opportunity to do as a young player. So I think it's very valuable to the young player, but quite frankly, I think it's annoying to most of the veteran players.
We're in studio with Mark Kelso. He is live with us, the former Bills safety, who's my partner on the Bills radio broadcast. The phone lines are open if you have a comment or question for Mark. 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You were here a couple of weekends ago and watched a little bit of the rookie minicamp. Any initial impressions? What did you like what you saw?
I didn't have an opportunity to see everybody. I mean, obviously the size, the offensive line, and just the athleticism of those guys on the offensive line. I mean, I don't need to name them all. I probably couldn't name them all right now, except that I got a card in front of me, so I probably could.
No,
well, I could name them. You know, I got a call from a high school coach, one of the players, which was a college teammate of mine who coached Cyril in high school in the Baltimore area, and just told me what a great young man he is, and what a great selection he thought the Bills made. And, you know, obviously he's going to say that because he's his high school coach, but really interesting that his high school coach is still really involved in his career and has a lot of guys scattered throughout the NFL. Cameron Wake, he coached him too. But, you know, so there, I was impressed with the athleticism of that offensive line group. And it's obvious when you watch, and I had an opportunity to watch some one-on-one drills, and you watch Sammy Watkins in one-on-one, he's special.
Yeah.
And he's got some acceleration. He's got separation skills. They didn't have a quarterback that was delivering the football very effectively, but that's going to happen when the first couple days. I mean, I saw the first couple days when the rookies were together, and they don't understand where guys are going to show up in patterns. So very, very difficult for the quarterbacks in that situation to develop the timing. But there's some special guys there. I saw some guys in a defensive backfield that I think have some real promise as well. And, you know, guys that have quick feet, guys that can change directions. And that was funny because I'm walking past the drill the one time, Coach Henderson, and he was doing a drill where he was asking the guys to do something and react to a three-step game, I think it was. And then he was kind of sitting guys down if they didn't do it correctly. And he had two guys at the end. I don't even recall who they were, but they did it right a couple times in a row, so he couldn't eliminate. He couldn't end up picking a winner. He got frustrated with the drill, and he said, so the last time he did it, I was walking by, and he said, hey, and they did the drill, and he said, neither one of you guys said quick, 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 because he wants them to say quick, 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 and then react as they're talking the down as well. And they said, neither one of you guys said it. You're both disqualified. And they said, we said it, coach, we said it. So he said, hey, Kelso, he said, did you hear him say anything? I just shook my head and kept on walking.
You threw him under the bus.
I did. And they go, well, who's that guy anyways? And he goes, I'll tell you who that guy is later.
Yeah.
So, but it was funny. But it was nice to see. And what I saw last year from the staff in their first year here in Buffalo was just the attention to detail and the actual coaching that went on, not assuming that these guys really understand everything about the position, but talking about, you know, particularly from a defensive back standpoint, vertical and lateral separation and closing speed and where to close to the hips and where your eyes need to be and when you can attempt to make a play on the football depending on what position you are on the intended receiver. So that was really nice to see.
Mark Kelso, our guest, the color analyst on the Bills Radio Network and author. He has created a book called Play the Down Football Film Study Guide, created by Mark Kelso. The books are in the process of being published. Tell us about this project, Mark. What do you got in mind here?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you say a book, it's really a workbook,
yeah,
is what it is. But, you know, in my course of conversation with coaches at all levels, NFL coaches, collegiate coaches, and high school coaches, it becomes very apparent that guys need a lot of instruction when it comes to what information they're able to take out of a film study session and how that information is going to help them perform better on game day. So, you know, in the course of these conversation with these coaches, particularly this past year, you know, I said, you know, I think I can help with that because this is what I've been doing. This is kind of the way I prepare for the broadcast now just a little bit differently. I don't have it in a nice, neat, concise format, which it is now, but this is the way I prepared when I played. So it's information that you're going to need to take to get back that one step that you might be missing on a particular play. So the whole theme of the project was let's think the down before it happens and then play the down. Just play. When the down occurs, you're just playing it, but you have that little edge of anticipation because of your film preparation, because if you understand what this, if you're a defensive player, what the offensive unit is intending to do in certain situations. So it's a very methodical approach. It's, and I did it. I published it with a local printing shop with Keller Brothers downtown in Buffalo, have been in the printing business for a long, long time. And they helped me put it together. And I do think it's a first class piece. You know, it's copyrighted and everything. So, but it's a workbook is what it is. And it's really 10 pages per game, so front and back, 5 pages front and back per game, that goes through a methodical approach in preparation for your upcoming opponent, both from a defensive perspective, and then there's an offensive book when you're the offense preparing against a defensive unit.
The books are called Play the Down Football Film Study Guide. You've got one for offense, one for defense. Oftentimes we'll hear players say, oh, we watched film all week, or we got together at so-and-so's house and watched film. You're trying to avoid guys watching film and not getting the most out of it. Is that correct?
Well, there's a couple things, too. I mean, at the collegiate level, there's a lot of NCAA restrictions on film study or actually on time that coaches are allowed to spend with their players. And what I've found in my travels around the East Coast here, particularly in the last several months with helmet technology and football, the film study guide, is the fact that limits the coach's time with their players to about 4.5 hours of film time per week. What I'm trying to do is create real efficiency from a player so that when they watch the film, they know exactly the information that they're attempting to get, and then they actually acquire that information so they're best prepared to play the game on whether it's Saturday afternoon at the collegiate level, Sunday afternoon for the NFL, or Friday night for the high school player. And then the coaches can use the book. It's not about skill development. It's not about coaching your players at all. I mean, there are a lot of coaching styles. You know, there are some things that Coach Henderson does in the defensive backfield that aren't necessarily things that I would teach as a defensive back coach, but he does a fantastic job because he does them consistently. He has specific regiment to the way he intends those guys to do those things, yeah. And it becomes a very effective way, you know, to cover guys.
So strategy doesn't matter. The playbooks right. don't matter, right? When you right. Use this book.
It's available. I mean, yeah, they're... I guess saying doesn't matter means that there's no coaching involved. It's
right.
Any coach in any system will be able to allow their players to prepare best for their opponent by using this information. You know, it's because it's laid out in a methodical approach from a general strategy, and then you mine down and get a little bit more specific. So if you're the defense studying the offense, when you're going to look at what the general strategy of this offense is, then you're going to look at the running game and things they do effectively in the running game, and conversely, how you might defend them, and then things they do in the passing game and how you might defend them, and then what their receivers. So what are the best escape moves of their receivers? What are the guys I have to pay attention to? We always talk about who's the go-to guy.
Right.
So in critical situations, there's a special situations page. And, you know, what are the applicable things on third down, in short yardage, in red area? Who's the go-to player in a critical situation? What's the go-to play? Because a lot of teams have a play that they'll begin to favor throughout the course of the year that may have been successful in previous weeks. And so it kind of lays out in a methodical approach. So in the end, when you're done and you conduct your film study, if you're doing it on your own with your position group, then you'll have an opportunity by answering these questions to say, I really understand my opponent this week, and that's going to give you that edge on game day.
Play the Down is the book created by Mark Kelso, a football film study guide. So in the offensive book, and I've opened it up here, you've got, what, 10 games, 10 opponents they can scout? How many are in each
book? Well, the books that you have in your hand are designed for a high school team, so they would have 10 games in there. A college team would have 12.
It says opponent, date, weather, blah, blah. So they're watching video, and you basically assign different things to look at and have them kind of check off what they see. I mean, it's pretty methodical, right?
Yeah, it's methodical, and there's an ease of use here, too. I mean, you could do it by yourself if you're watching film on your iPad. I mean, a lot of teams are using Huddle these days, so you could be watching that film and then answering these questions. It was kind of fun for me, like even my son Cody, who plays at Kutztown, and
right.
You know he'll send me passwords to watch his film on Huddle of the upcoming opponent, and I can go through the same approach with him and then talk to him later in the week, and he'll say, you know, what did you see? And I'll say, well, you got to look for this and this guy. This is the offensive lineman that gives the play away generally, and this is what the running back is doing in this particular situation. If he's going to come out for a pass, and if he's going to run to the flat, he's in this position. If he's going to circle across the line of scrimmage or across the center again, he's in that position.
How do you envision these teams use, like, say, a high school team? Would they take this book into the film study, the entire team or the offensive unit?
Yeah, I think there's two ways you could use it. One is I think you could take this into your entire film study session, and you could have your players answering questions as they're watching film, or more likely watch film early in the week, and then on Wednesday begin to take the books in as they begin to see how the upcoming opponent, how their strategy begins to unfold, and then take that book home so that when you're doing your individual film study on the computer, with whether it's Huddle or some of these other cloud opportunities that these kids have for film study, that they can answer those questions. Now on a Thursday afternoon or a Friday afternoon, the coach sits down and says, okay, hey, guys, grab your book and let's go through this team. What's the play that you think they're going to run in a critical situation to extend the game or win the game? And let's make sure everybody's on the same page. And you can see, you know, what's the skill set of this quarterback? What's the thing we have to most concerned about that he doesn't beat us in a particular situation, whether it's on the run or with his legs or you know, does he stand tall in the pocket? So all those little things. So now we make sure everybody's on the same page. And then, again, it gives you that one step of anticipation on game day. So they line up in a particular formation. You understand what the likelihood is that they're going to run a particular play or at least some type of strategy that they're going to engage, and then you can react that much quicker on game day.
You can play the down.
You can play the down.
What? How long do you think it would take to go through a game for an average football player, any level? I mean, is that going to add time to film study?
It's going to create efficiency for the film study they're already conducting.
Okay,
but I would say that, you know, when you talk to, and I've talked to players at all levels, and you know, you get some guys at the NFL level. You know, one guy might be watching film on his own outside the confines of the coach for an hour, and for some guys that might be appropriate. If you're a cornerback and you're concerned, if you're a one-sided guy or you know, and you're going to be covering a guy man-to-man, you want to really study that particular player in depth, but you might not need to know the entire strategy because you play a lot of man defense. So in that case, that might be appropriate. A guy like a safety is going to have to put in, you know, an extra 5-7 hours on their own time to make sure that they're prepared to the level that they think they'll be most effective on game day. And then some guys might prepare even longer than that. But, I mean, it takes me just to do the broadcast work. I mean, I'm in the film room probably 6-7 hours, and then, you know, probably takes you 10 to 15 hours during the week of total preparation time as you're going through that information. And I think for players, if you were a collegiate player or you're a high school player, I would think if you spend a couple hours of film study during the week, you'd be able to effectively answer these questions and make sure that you're prepared best on game day. And if you're an NFL guy, it would take several hours outside the confines of what the coaching staff is requiring you to do or that you do perhaps with your position group.
Mark Kelso's book is Play the Down, a football film study guide. You see this as far as marketing it. You want to kind of sell it to whole teams, right? High school, college, pro level, right? Anybody.
Yeah. And I want to sell it to the entire team is what I want to do. And I want to sell a team package. So just – And you know, we're not going to make it expensive. It's not expensive. You can get on the website. There is a website, playthedown.com. And my contact information is there. My cell phone's on there, so people can call and order the book if they'd like to do that. coaches want to call and have me explain it to them and show them a sample, I'm more than happy to do that.
Is there anything
well,
like this out there? I mean, what do most teams what do most NFL teams do when they sit in the film room?
That's the whole point. There is, to my knowledge, there is nothing like this out there. And as I had talked with coaches this year, again, at all levels, at the professional level, and I was with some of the guys, friends of mine that I know on the Steelers staff, and you know, when I talk to guys at the collegiate level and high school coaches as well, they say that no one's ever really put it in a methodical approach like this. I mean, they want guys to study film, they want guys to get the best value of the information that they're watching, but they don't exactly know what they're doing. I'll give you. You want some examples?
Yeah,
I'm always about examples.
I got one call I want to get in here for
okay.
you.
Okay, so I go to one program and coach says, "Hey, come on out on the field. Why don't you watch practice, spring practice?" So I say to the kids, "I'm watching practice, and the defensive backs are standing over the side. So I grabbed them and pulled them over with me so we could get some mental reps. So we're actually behind the offense, behind the defense too. So we're looking at the offense in front of us." And I said, "What's this play going to be?" And they said, "We're not sure." I said, "This is going to be a pass." And it was a pass. Sometimes you get lucky. But I hit three in a row. And I said, "What's this play?" And they said, "We're not sure." I said, "This is a pass, too." And the next play, I said, "What's this play going to be?" And they said, "Pass, of course." And I said, "No, it's going to be a run to the defensive left." And they said, "Well, how do you know this?" And I said, "Well, I got a lot of experience. But let me just tell you this. I've only watched your team for 15 minutes. But the offensive guard on your defensive left side gives a play away every time. And I don't even know what your offense is yet, because I've only been watching for a little bit, but there's little clues depending on where his hand is, if it's out in front of his foot, if it's back by his hip, where it is, if it's right close to his right leg, because he had his right hand down. So if it's close to his right leg, or if it's more in the middle of his body frame, where he's going to move, if he's going to move to the left, move to the right, if he's going to sit back in his stance. So those are all the little things that you need to be able to pick up, particularly, and that was the defensive player, obviously, but as a defensive player, if you can pick those little things up, and then the whole idea is that doesn't mean that you think it's going to be a run to the left, so you just fly out of there and you neglect your responsibility and you just say, "I know it's a run to the left," and then you get beat on a play-action pass. But if it is to run to the left and you start out maintaining the integrity of the defense and it is a run to the left, boy, you're that much quicker to the football and you react that much quicker because what happened is what you anticipated happening, and that's the whole premise to the book. Let's be prepared. Let's think before, play during, and get back that one step that you're missing so you can make more plays.
Mark Kelso's book, his workbook, Play the Down, a football film study guide, and you can read more about it at playthedown.com. Got a call for you here, Mark, from Landon in Amherst. Hello, Landon. You're on the air.
It sounds like a really great book. I mean, I can tell definitely that Mr. Kelso has a good base of knowledge, obviously, being in the pros and everything. I was just wondering maybe what we could expect this season from E.J. Manuel, you know, how he would progress, especially with Sammy Watkins.
Hey, good to hear from you, Landon.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
Landon's a good young man.
Okay.
He's a brilliant young mind. But he, E.J. Manuel, you know what? I would expect some great growth from him this year, Landon. I mean, there's a lot of things that the Bills need to improve. I mean, we could talk, I guess, how much time we got?
You got about 2 minutes.
Oh, that's it? You're going to restrict my time?
I got an 8:30 guest.
Oh, my gosh. You didn't tell me that. So here's where,
just
first
like
of all.
Like a Sunday in the fall.
That's it. Let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about the draft for a second, okay? Where did the Bills need help? Okay, their third down production was bad. Their red area production was bad. They gave up 53 sacks against a four-man rush. So their protection wasn't great. But some of that was as a result of guys being in and out of the lineup and injuries that occurred, too. And a quarterback who was a rookie quarterback, so held the ball sometimes, and receivers don't get. I mean, so there's a myriad of reasons why, you know, he was sacked that many times. But that being said, there's a couple things that need to happen. One is he needs to be with the coaching staff and be in a great offseason strength and conditioning program. He'll probably gain about 15 pounds. He'll be a lot stronger and be able to take some of those hits. He'll be a lot smarter, too, and he won't take some of those hits because when he runs, he's probably going to get out of bounds and he'll be instructed to do so. And the offensive line, the guys that they drafted in the offensive line, and now the upgrade at the receiver position is going to give him an opportunity to find early opportunities in the down and get rid of the football. And he should just be leaps and bounds. I mean, last year he was what percentage? I think he was 58% completion.
Sounds
which
right.
Which needs to be, I mean, he needs to be at 65%. Third down conversions need to be, you know, in the high 30s or low 40s, which they were in the low 30s last year. And I think you'll see all those numbers come up to an area where the Bills might have a legitimate opportunity. I mean, I don't want to start talking playoffs now, but if they make the progress that I think they can make in the second year, these first-year players, and if their veteran players continue to play at the level that they exhibited last year and the defense that played really well, and you know, most of the time they gave up a couple big plays, and that's why statistically they weren't quite as good as I think their defense was, because they gave up some big plays in both the passing game and the running game. But if they can do those things and they get the production out of the rookie players that they drafted this year, particularly Sammy Watkins and I think Cyril Kwangio. I mean, he's gonna be a guy that's gonna see extensive playing time as well. And if they get the production out of that, I like the kid from Philadelphia too. My sources in Philadelphia tell me that he's a great
running back,
great inside runner,
yeah.
Great contact balance. He's not going down with one guy. You know, he's gonna take a couple guys to bring him down. So, and they need some inside presence in a running game. You know, I think they want CJ to run the ball more effectively inside, and I think he'll do that this year. But Fred, who's fantastic, still fantastic in my mind, but you know, he's got some injury issues with where he is in his career. So you want to be able to protect him a little bit and not put too many miles on his legs either. So adding those pieces and the young man from San Francisco as well. But that, all those things collectively will make the offense better, which will make EJ Manuel better.
The book Play the Down. Tell us again if anyone's interested, reading more about it. Maybe and coaches, administrators who might be interested.
Yeah,
in buying it for
playthedown.com. We'll have there's a website that we created. I had a young entrepreneurial student from Canisius create for me, and my contact information is on there, an email address. You could email me at I can't even remember my email address there. I think it's mkelso15@playthedown.com.
Okay.
So you could do that, or if you get on the website, the email address is there, and then my contact information, there's a cell phone number there that you can call me. And I'd be happy to come show you the book, show you how it works and how the methodical approach is put together that will best prepare your players for game day.
It's a great idea. Good work. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark Kelso, our broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network, his book, Play the Down, a football film study guide. Go to playthedown.com for more information on that. We'll take a break, come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Our thanks to Mark Kelso. It's always a pleasure to talk with Mark. It does remind me of our Friday, regular Friday night visit with Mark Kelso. Great to have him in here. And his book is, I think, a great idea. Pretty cool. Play the Down, a football film study guide created by Mark Kelso. If you need more information, go to playthedown.com. Playthedown.com, Mark Kelso's book. Let's turn the page a little bit and go from on-field football performance to money and how it relates to the NFL. On the line with us, a frequent guest, he is the founder, editor of SpotTrack, Michael Giannitti, a local guy. And SpotTrack is a website that analyzes NFL salaries and cap hits, also the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL. Mike Giannitti is on the line with us live right now. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us tonight. We appreciate it.
John, thanks for having me back.
Let's have you describe what SpotTrack is, because I just gave us the capsule account. But tell us in your own words what the website SpotTrack is and what you do.
Sure. So, on the surface, like you said, it's salaries, it's contracts for the players and the teams for the major four sports. And then inside of that, we kind of analyze and project and forecast based on the numbers that currently exist. So, for instance, you know, we have numbers for the 2015 NFL teams in terms of salary cap and projections based on how the contracts break down, and we can analyze, you know, potential cap casualties and guys that may have to restructure contracts. And, you know, we've got a great tool set built by my co-founder, Scott Allen, who he's really kind of brought application development to the system and allowed people to be able to spreadsheet and database these kind of things on their own terms. So, you know, however you need financial information in terms of sports, we're looking to help you out with that.
And is your co-founder, is he a Western New Yorker as well, Mike?
Born and raised in Angola, like myself.
Wow.
He actually lives down in Virginia now, but we're kind of doing this thing remotely together.
You know, it's been a couple of years since we had you on to talk about the concept. Tell me how SpotTrack has grown and you know, what sort of interest you've had in the – how long has the website been up, by the way? It's been more than a few years now, right?
Sure. We're about 6 years in, and, you know, every year there's a new element. There's a new taste to it, but it kind of just started off you know, kind of how you described it, we were looking to put together a system that basically just, you know, described the information, the salaries and things like that. And as these sports have evolved in terms of salary caps and those kind of things, the sites have to move with it. So, you know, we started off as just a reference site, and we've moved quickly to, you know, analytics and projections and actual living, breathing elements that, you know, the news sources and such are asking for. So it's been a good 6 years in terms of turnover and being able to build this out. And, you know, in terms of being a big sports fan and a web guy, it's kind of a dream come true.
Yeah, and I noticed that you have a partnership with the Pro Football Writers Association. How does that work? What do you do for them, Mike?
Right, so basically that's an association that sort of gives me a little bit of a reputation in terms of the league. You know, I'm able to write my articles and post to that association and hopefully get some feedback from it. And, you know, in terms of the numbers, you know, I'm able to provide a little bit different element than most of the reporters out there. So it's just basically an association of reporters and sports writers. And I get a vote every year in terms of like the MVP and things like that. So it's a great association for me and kind of a privilege.
We're on the line with Mike Jannetty. He is the founder and editor of SpotTrack.com, a website that looks at sports salaries. And in particular, Mike, what was brought to my attention why we got you on tonight was your recent post about the NFL's best value rankings from last season. And you say you've looked back at the season to analyze the teams and the players as they pertain to true value. What do you have in mind when you talk about true value?
Sure. So that's kind of the buzzword for the last 18 months of SpotTrack. You know, with money comes production and the comparison between the two. So we've kind of developed a function here called the true value statistic, which, for lack of better terms, takes on the field production, including, you know, statistics, compares it to money, and basically, you know, provides a rating for each individual player in terms of how they produced based on their pay grade. And by pay grade, I generally mean the cap hit in terms of the NFL. So what we've done here is we've kind of looked back at every single player in terms of the depth chart, evaluated their production statistically based on Pro Football Focus's ratings, which kind of takes an analytical approach to the stats, and we've attached the cap number to that. So what I've done here is I've actually assessed each player with other players of that position. So I find the median salary for a left tackle, for instance. And when I'm looking at a median salary, then I'm able to say, okay, so based on what Cordy Glenn was worth in 2013, he should have produced at this level. And if he did, you know, 20% better, then his rating was 20% higher. So we've done an analytical approach to rating value based on both money and stats, and the outcome's a nice, big, long rankings list, which everybody seems to love these days.
Yeah, and on your list, in fact, you do have Cordy Glenn, the Bills' left tackle, is the 23rd most valuable player this past season. What is that? So that number that you've assigned him, the TBS, 26.91, what does that mean?
Right, so it means, for lack of a better term, it means that he was nearly 27% a better value than all the other left tackles in the NFL last year based on how much he was paid, how much his cap figure was in 2013. Gotcha. So in terms of the Bills utilizing him as a starting left tackle, they got a extremely good gain out of him.
And the number one player on your list is J.J. Watt of the Houston Texans.
Sure.
But he's like way over the top, 109.97.
Different planet, completely different planet. And it was week by week he progressed, you know, 20 to 25 points in terms of value rating per week. You know, you've got these guys on these rookie contracts at the wage scale, and you know, if they're even close to an All-Pro, they're killing it in terms of value. So, you see a lot of these teams turning over veterans into rookies, and this is a great example of why they're doing it. You know, you find these lightning rods like Watt or Russell Wilson or guys like that, and you can get 3 to 5 years of maximum value out of these guys with the production on the field.
Yeah, and in fact, so I just looked over your top 25 list. There are some guys who you would think are still in their rookie contract, but there are others. Von Miller, sure. Peyton Manning, Robert Mathis, who essentially what we're talking about is outperforming their contract, right?
Incredibly, right. So they've got a steep hill to climb in terms of getting their value because of their actual dollar figure. So Peyton Manning, for instance, came in with a $17.5 million cap value last year. So in terms of the average quarterback's cap, he was well above it. So his production was so good last year that he actually, you know, superseded his own value and the rest of the quarterbacks along with it.
The other post I wanted to mention to you, ask you about, Mike, and you wrote this one as well, contract forecast, C.J. Spiller. We all know C.J. is going into the final year of his rookie contract. What do you see in the future for C.J. based on your statistical analysis?
Sure. So, you know, this was kind of a hot buzz topic coming in, especially with the draft of Sammy Watkins here in terms of playmaking with the Bills. So, you know, I really just kind of wanted to take a look at where CJ was in terms of his production, which, you know, we know has been up and down because of injury and lack of use and things like that. So, you know, what kind of surprised me is, he's going to be 27 early August here. So in terms of a second contract, he's a little bit older than some of these guys that were getting deals, you know, inside of their rookie contract. So if the Bills let him play this out, this rookie contract out, he's going to be, you know, nearly 28 next offseason. And, you know, that 28 to 30 has kind of become that hot range for running backs in terms of peak and, you know, devaluing them and pushing them aside for a rookie. So he's kind of in a weird area right now. He's got to have kind of a banner year here and really kind of make himself, you know, worth it on the field here because statistically he's certainly above average, you know, and we've seen him break out. We've seen him make big plays and change games. But when you put him dollar for dollar and stat for stat against these other running backs who aren't getting the paydays they used to get, he's kind of in the middle of it all. So what I did is I put him up against LeSean McCoy, Chris Johnson, Matt Forte, and Reggie Bush, who I think is probably the best comparison in terms of style, statistics, and honestly the age. He was pretty close to where CJ could be at the end of next year. So, you know, I did a stat comparison in terms of how he held up both in the running game and in the receiving game. So I gave him his due in terms of both. And we had him ended up at about a three-year, $12.1 million contract. So just north of $4 million a year. And I did 3 years just because, you know, if he becomes 28 and sitting on that free agent market, you know, there's not going to be a lot of teams that will push out to a 4 or 5 year contract to make him 33 and, you know, and keep running backs like that around that long anymore. So, you know, we came in right over $4 million a year, which is about 12th or 13th on the average running back right now. So it's not an incredible deal by any means, and I think that might shock some people. But in terms of the stats, that's where these running backs are getting paid right now.
It's great work. We appreciate you coming on tonight to talk with us about it, Mike. We'll be in touch. Thanks for coming on with us tonight.
Hey, Sean.
Mike Jannetty is the founder and editor of SpotTrack.com, SpotRac.com. He's got a couple of interesting posts that kind of deal with the Bills in the NFL, contract forecast for C.J. Spiller, and the NFL's best value rankings for 2013. They're both up there at SpotTrack.com. Take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Just a couple of minutes left on show. Show's gone by quickly tonight. Mike Jannetty, Mark Kelso, Fred Jackson, our guests. We got a good show in the hopper for tomorrow. Let's squeeze in a call from Pete in Lancaster. Hi, Pete. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. I'm still frustrated by the loss of Jarius Byrd. I think that last summer at this time, if we had made him a reasonable offer, he would have taken it and not waited till the very end. Do you feel the frustration of the Byrd loss at all?
I don't, but I understand people who do. We talked about this a lot. I mean, I think all along the Bills had a dollar figure in mind of what they thought a safety was worth in the NFL. We probably, if we had more time with Mike Jannetty, I probably should have got into it with him. And they didn't want to go over that dollar figure no matter what, in this year's case, no matter what the franchise tag value was. And the franchise value jumped up considerably, right, this past year. What'd it go from 6 to 8 million, I think, tag value, Mike?
Yeah, I think that is. That's
I right. mean, that's a yeah. big jump in 1 year. All of it, obviously, you know, relative to what the money that's coming in, obviously. But I just think they felt like they had a value in mind. They didn't want to go over their value. I understand, though, Pete, why you'd be frustrated.
Yeah, I just got the impression Doug Whaley did not come out of the box with a very strong offer the first time around with him.
Well, yeah, again, it probably preceded his tenure, too, the first couple of talks with an agent who obviously had an agent did a good job for him, too, got him a nice landing spot at some really good money. He was in a good position. And I also think Jarius wanted to look around. He made it pretty clear. He wanted to see what his value would be. He wanted to see what was out there, wanted to test the market. He said that over and over and over again. And he did that and worked out for him financially. Will it work out in every respect as far as on-field performance with the Saints and, you know, being the type of player, the impact player that he was here? Time will tell. But they had a value in mind. They did not want to go over the value. They did not. And It sort of played out to the end, unfortunately, for those Jairus Bird fans out there. It played out the way that Bird, I think, wanted it to, and it played out as far as the Bills not going over their value the way that the Bills wanted it to. It's unfortunate. That's free agency. That's what happens in free agency. All right, tomorrow night, good show planned. It is the first day of OTAs. I'm going to talk with Troy Vincent tomorrow on the line with us at 8. He's the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the league now about these OTAs. And we're going to talk to some of the players involved, plus head coach Doug Marrone. We'll hear from him tomorrow as well, so make sure you're around for that, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Pete Cargis, the engineer. Our producer is Mike Adamek. And the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. From One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.